Very nice to see all of you, many of you again, and it's nice to spend the evening here. It was suggested to me that I draw the subject from the Bhagavad Gita, so I picked up Swamiji's commentary, and it's chapter 8, verse 19. It's about reincarnation. Why not? Again and again, O son of Pritha, Arjuna, the same people throng back to earth to be reborn. The cycle of reincarnation ends for them only temporarily with the descent of Brahma's night. It resumes again with the dawn of Brahma's day. Now, I didn't really choose that one to scare us to death, or to scare us to reincarnation, actually, not death. So the point I'm not really going to talk about being so inattentive to our spiritual well-being that a whole day of Brahma passes and we're still wandering. Swamiji talks about how alarmed he was when he heard that possibility that souls would be manifested and would be so unable to see the reality of this world that they would go through a whole cycle again. Swamiji also had the impression that everybody had to do that, that you do this long, endless effort to become realized, then the creation is withdrawn and you're just back at the bottom and you have to do it all over again. In his commentary, Swami says that even though most aspects of creation are cyclical, that self-realization is linear, that we do just start towards self-realization, and when we attain it, we don't just fall to the bottom again. So I do want to put that particular fear to rest. But it is true also, as this explains, that even though progression is possible, it is possible just simply to become so enamored of this world that we really make no effort to escape from it. Now, Master explains something that I think is really important in the context of reincarnation. He said, what causes us to reincarnate is seldom that everything has gone wrong. Really, what causes us to reincarnate is that it's almost gone right. That everything was perfect except for one small thing. And therefore we have in our mind that the only thing that was really wrong was that one small thing. And if I can just try one more time, but this time I'll be a man instead of a woman, this time I'll be a blonde instead of a brunette, this time I'll be an American instead of an Indian, or an Indian instead of American, this time I will marry Rajat instead of Gaurav, or Gaurav instead of Rajat, you know, whichever way it is. That it was almost perfect, except my brother-in-law was a better husband than my husband. Right? Whatever it is. But if you actually start watching your own mind, we realize that that is what captures us. If everything is terrible, we go into this enormous world-rejecting attitude. You know, I've gone bankrupt, I want to be a renunciate. My husband has left me, I want to be a renunciate. You know, I have grown too fat to be marriageable, I want to be a renunciate. Whatever it might be, it's everything is terrible. But what really calls us back is when it almost works. And Master said that's the trick about this world, is that it's very close to ideal. And you see lots of people in the world who are working very hard to try to make it ideal. And their concept is that if everybody just cooperated with their plan, then it would be a perfect world, wouldn't it? I was saying last night to some of you, many years ago, where I live in California, there was a conference of people who were all trying to start communities. And Peter Caddy was there. There's a community in Scotland called Findhorn, which you've probably heard of. He was the founder. He's passed away now. And I was there. And Swami Kriyananda did not come, but I went in his place. And we were the only two people in this big conference who actually had communities. And I had experience, I had a slide presentation, I had much to say. Everybody else there was hoping someday if somebody would help them buy the land, and if they could get some people who wanted to work with them, who agreed with their plan, then they would start a community. I literally sat through slideshows of land that was for sale that they were hoping someone would help you buy. But people were interested in what Peter Caddy had to say, but no one was interested in what I had to say. And I finally asked Peter, why is nobody paying any attention to me? You know, I'm a nice person, why not? He said, because you're not telling them that this world can be perfected. And his message was pretty much, this world can be perfected. As he put it specifically, he said, I promised them heaven on earth. You're telling them you have to leave earth to have heaven. And it's just not a popular message, right? And it isn't a popular message. In fact, someone who came to our temple said to us once, he said, everyone talks about overcoming the ego. And then he looked really shocked. But you people really mean it. And it's true. You know, most people are looking for ways in which they can just adjust it a little. And even often, as Swami writes in the commentary to this verse 8:19, he said, people are trying to get good karma and do the right thing, but the thought in their mind is not that they'll transcend this world altogether, but that if I do the right thing, this world will work better for me. And if it doesn't work now, it'll work better in the next lifetime if we're thinking of reincarnation. But there's a whole another dimension here, and this is the attitude that Krishna is speaking of, where the whole day of Brahma can go by and you're still wandering around because there's just one more little adjustment that you want to try before you really fully and finally give up on this and realize that what is possible for us so far transcends this experience that it isn't so difficult to put it aside. But we don't put it aside until we feel more joy in doing so. I have this much greater sense of freedom in my life at the age that I am now than I had 40 years ago. It's been 40 years and more of serious spiritual effort, but there is a certain factor which I understand is just that I'm not 20 anymore, thank God. Okay, because things happen, enough things happen that you just get a perspective on life. But I have this anxiety, it's like my, well, it won't be secret because I'm about to tell you and put it on the internet, but I've had this thought in my mind, if I'm 20 again, will I be as stupid as I was this time, or will I remember some of what I know? I have this picture in my mind, and I project myself toward it often. Sister Gyanamata, in her marvelous book, God Alone, which is really one of the greatest spiritual books that you can find, it's her letters and her life. She was Master's most advanced woman disciple. She had a very unhappy mother, and the life situation was not good, and because she was such an advanced soul, even when she was 3 and 4 years old, her mother used to confide in her about her troubles, because I'm sure her mother figured out that this tiny little girl was a much wiser soul than she was. But the way Gyanamata describes it, I love what she describes. So she's 4 years old, and her mother is telling her that her mother's life is not working. And with the expanded awareness that she had, even though she was four, she made serious note of this. That here's my mother who's supposed to be having such a good life and it's not working for her. And she stored that away in her spiritual self. My friend of mine who's very serious on the spiritual path now, but had no intimation of it until she was 40. But she remembers, she said, being 10 and looking around and saying, being a child is not nearly such a good deal as everyone thinks it is. Now she thinks she was sort of like talking to her friends in the astral world. Being a child is not such a good deal. And then she said to herself, don't forget this. She had no context for it, but now, of course, she understands. So I have this thought in my mind that if I'm going to be born again, which, as I've said in other contexts, the last incarnation looks like Swami Kriyananda. So I think there's a few more coming for me. But I want to be at least 65 the day I'm born. At least. And I want all the adults around me to say, she was never a child. She was just born an old woman, and she stayed an old woman all the way through until she was an old woman. That to me would be fabulous. You know, just to come into this world, to live in this world and be joyful, because I'm much happier since 65 than I was before. It's not about being unhappy. It's just keeping track of why I'm here and what I'm doing. Well, I expressed to Swamiji what I was starting to say was my concern that what passes, what I perceive as wisdom now, is merely old age, and that youth will just wipe it all out again. And his answer to me was not right on point, but it was much deeper. He said there are two things that cause the soul to reincarnate. And he said one of them is longing, and the other is regret. Isn't that a wonderful way to put it? Longing and regret. Because these are the things that pull on the heart. Because this is where it comes from. It comes from the restlessness of the heart. The heart is not at peace because there was something that it wanted that it didn't get. When I was in this room a few days ago, I talked a lot about fulfillment versus disappointment, so I will refer you to that rather than going deeply. But something that we want. And think about it in terms of your meditation and what makes you restless. A few of you, who I won't embarrass by identifying, have mentioned to me that your meditations are sometimes a little restless. Okay? And it happens to all of us. But one thing that I have learned, which I haven't said to any of you who have asked me, which is important to know, sometimes we learn a great deal from what disturbs us in meditation. Because much of the time in our lives, we're basically running ahead of whatever is disturbing our hearts. You know, it's like we sit down to do a piece of work and all of a sudden we're hungry, or we remember that there's a problem over here, or maybe I'll call my cousin, or perhaps my mother needs help, or look, there's no milk in the refrigerator. And we just like, or, you know, I'll turn on the television, or I'll go onto Facebook, whatever it might be, that we're not at peace with ourselves, so we just keep moving. And it's really literally we're being chased by our restlessness, but we don't even know we're restless because we're moving so much ahead of it that we don't feel it. I had a very interesting level one meditation class. I used to teach that years ago in our temple. Later, many others did, Trishti and Surendra among them, when they lived with us. But when I was teaching it, I remember a class once, and it was the second class. So I had taught them the Hong Sa technique, and people had actually gone home and practiced it, which in itself was gratifying to me. They hadn't just waited to come back and then practice that time. And they started each one, fortunately they were forthcoming, they each one started talking about what disturbed them in their meditation. The first one said, as soon as I started meditating, I just felt so sad. He said, actually, tears came to my eyes. Another one said, as soon as I started meditating, I just felt so angry. Another one said, as soon as I started meditating, my body was just completely like it was covered with ants. I couldn't stand it. Another one said, as soon as I sit to meditate, I get hungry. Another one said, as soon as I start meditating, I become worried that I'm not doing it right. Right? I mean, and because there was enough people in the class speaking up and each one was saying different, it's like, oh, this is what, these are the feelings that we're always running ahead of, running away from is actually the right word. And we imagine that it's ruining our meditation. But in fact, you see, the practice of meditation is raising your consciousness enough so that you become aware of what we're not aware of. Ideally, we raise our consciousness sufficiently that we become aware of God's presence, which we are presently not aware of, but we start where we are. And awareness just begins to increase. And so people think that, well, when I sit to meditate, I'm so restless. No, no, no. You are so restless that when you sit to meditate, you're no longer running ahead of it. And so people will think that that means they're not meditating well. No, it means you're meditating very well because you're finally pulling back and allowing whatever is there to rise to the level of consciousness, and then you can begin to work with it. However that may be, obviously meditation is the best. Or, why am I sad? We can be sad about something that happened hundreds of years ago. I had a dream once. It's the only past life dream I've ever had. I have a couple of other intimations of things that were possible. A psychic person told me, and I don't know if this is true, but it could be. I'm diverging. She said, I helped start the French Revolution. Which kind of rings true. But I spoke untruth a lot and got people in trouble. That's why I have to keep teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching till I bring it all back to balance. I don't know if that's true or not, but it amuses me. Once I had to go to City Hall in our town. Let me phrase it differently. Once people were foolish enough to send me to City Hall, I went there to talk about the sign outside our temple, and I got this. Well, I don't want to speak ill of people like I want to. This woman who did not inspire me with her intelligence or her broad-minded care for humanity. I became so angry. I rarely become angry like that. I mean, really angry, that I had to walk out, and I'm thinking of things like Molotov cocktails. You know, I just want to bomb the City Hall. Fortunately, I got out of there, and all I said to my husband, don't ever send me there again. What were we thinking? So, yes, I think I did start the French Revolution. But you see, I'm just talking to this woman about the sign in front of our church, and she's not cooperating with me, and I want to blow up her building. Like, I'm not living in the present. I'm living way somewhere else. And my husband can go, he can just spend all day talking to this woman about the sign, just as patient as can be, and you know, just working her around to having it be fine. He never thinks of blowing up the building. But I had this dream in which I dreamt about a woman with whom I did not get along. And I dreamt a lifetime, whatever lifetime it was, people were driving carriages with horses, and there were kings and queens. And somehow in all of that, this person that I didn't get along with had tremendous power over me and really ruined my life in a really, like, humongous way. You know, killed people I loved and all this sort of stuff. Fortunately, in the dream, I ended up in a convent, and I was really happy. But still, so the next day I see this woman, it's like, you know, I'm still trying to run away from her in the carriage, I'm still trying to protect my loved ones from her murdering them, all this stuff. It's like, it was right there. It just didn't, there was no distance, nothing. And it really told me that. Well, I'll quote a Buddhist monk who put this. We think of one lifetime and the time in between and the life after as all these discrete events. They are not separate events. It is one continuous expansion of consciousness, and everything goes with us until we resolve it all. No. So when we sit to meditate and all these nameless things come up, that's why we're meditating. And the reason most people don't meditate is they don't want to know. You know, we're always running ahead of this. But as Swami put it so simply, it rules us whether we know it or not. And so the profound value of meditation, first of all, is that it begins to clear out those chakras. This is what Kriya is. The practice of Kriya proper and the whole method of Kriya is the way we begin to purge ourselves of those realities. Because all those unresolved longings and regrets, however, you know, regret is disappointment and anger and that things didn't come out the way I wanted them to come out, I wanted them to be like this. And we have to just relax inside ourselves enough to realize that now that we know about the spiritual path, you know, we have brought to bear on all of this a power that will free us from all these experiences. But also within ourselves, we have to make a decision about what is really important to us. You know, do I want to just have these cycles just keep running and running? And when I sit to meditate and I feel angry, I decide that I'm not going to meditate anymore. In my beginning meditation classes, I would explain to people why they're going to quit meditating. And one of the reasons people quit meditating, as many of you have heard me say, is because it begins to work. And we become suddenly aware of who we actually are from the point of view of regret and longing. But the other side of it is, once we begin to realize, let me think how to say this. You know, I was trying to imagine what it's like in the astral world and how we incarnate. Master says, if we've meditated even a little bit, he says we can go through the death experience fairly consciously because we have begun to understand that consciousness exists independent of the brain, that consciousness makes the brain rather than the brain making consciousness. And Master has this marvelous phrase. He said, people who don't understand that, who feel that the brain makes consciousness, when they feel the brain begin to die, they feel obligated to go unconscious. I love the way he said that. I don't have a brain, therefore I can't be conscious anymore. And he said, they'll go unconscious, they'll go into the astral world, he said, and never really wake up. They'll just sort of, as he called it, drift in a restful gray dream. They'll just drift in a restful gray dream, and they won't wake up again until they have another physical body. And suddenly they find themselves in a child's body and they remember that now they have a brain and they can be conscious and they'll start going through it again. If you've meditated even a little bit, and this is among many reasons why in the Gita Krishna says, even a little practice of this inward religion will free you from dire fears and colossal sufferings. Even a little practice of inner awareness that begins to tell us that all of these oscillations of the heart are not my reality, that there is a reality to me that can simply observe but doesn't have to be defined by all of these things. And we overcome these realities by many different levels, but one of them is we simply begin to see them in context. Or in a greater context. You know, a very, very good image. It's not that we don't want this or feel badly about this, but we begin also to understand that there's a great flow of life and that I myself have an identity that far transcends this little item here. So that we don't have to untie every knot. This is part of what Kriya does for us. It brings us just up into a bigger perspective on it. I mean, in truth, that's how we, well, on Sunday here, Sunday morning, I think it was, when We were talking about relationships. And at the end of it, someone asked me the question about how to forgive. And I answered it at the time, but I've actually been mulling that thought over and over in my mind a lot. Because we think of forgiveness in terms of you did something or you did something and now I'm upset and then gradually I'm not so upset with you anymore. But forgiveness is also ourselves. If we think that reincarnation is caused by longing and regret, what is regret? Regret is that I did something that now I wish I could undo. And we don't always think about forgiving ourselves, but some people raise that. But the question as it was asked, and I'll repeat the beginning of what I said then, is that forgiveness has, for me, has never worked as a concept, even though I have spoken on it and written about it and cooperated with people's interest in it. But it still is too much about me and someone else. And as long as it's me and someone else, there's going to be another cycle of it. Because in the end, we have to understand that it's just me and God. And so what I suggested is that we have to come to peace with reality as it is. So many times, Swamiji urged us, you've got to deal with things as they are. Whether it's your own nature, your own destiny, your own errors, your own financial situation, whatever it might be, you cannot make any progress until we're just able to see things as they are. And so the side of regret that keeps us bound is to just be able to see things as they are. And so many times I have been asked also as if I would know, you know, you look happier than me, get me there now, right? And after all the years that I've been on the spiritual path, which right now is like a fairly big number, but every one of you who is my chronological age also know how funny time is, isn't it? The numbers don't look big when you've actually lived them, because here we are, still now. Where are they? You know, they're not like piled up next to us. They're just gone. The only way I've seen that spiritual progress happens is you stop worrying about it. And every day you do your best. My husband was very helpful to me in this. I don't study astrology. I don't really follow it at all carefully. I believe in it. And every so often I've spent money trying to find out things about it. And I dragged my husband to a reading, which, as it happened, the astrologer was not very good, which contributed to what he said afterwards. We're walking out, and he just smiled at me, and he said, let's not waste money on this anymore. But then he said, which is something that has really helped me, he said, what difference does it make? He said, I get up every morning, and I do the best I can do. He said, I'm not going to do less or more for having this information. I just get up and do the best I can do. And on the spiritual path, we spend a lot of time looking for a shortcut, is the way that I think people think of it. It's like, there's got to be an easier way. In his commentary on this particular verse in the Gita, Swamiji just says, it's not at all hard to transcend the ego. And then he gives us about four sentences. You just stop thinking of yourself, you start thinking about God, you realize it was all a dream, and then you're free. And then he says, there, that wasn't so hard, was it? But many times, especially toward the end of his life, Swamiji would just look at us and say that. You think it's hard, he said, but it isn't. He said, all you have to do is just let it go. And once you just let it go, he said, you realize it was never difficult to do. It was just all of this, well, longing and regret that we allow to just keep spinning, and we don't want to face it, and we don't want to see it, and we don't want to be at peace with it. Just be at peace with it. I've never Some of you have heard me say this several times already this week. I have never seen it work to be at war with yourself. We get this idea that I'm supposed to be like that, I am like this, and then we start sort of just attacking the person that we are. I mean, that would be great if it worked, but I've never seen it work. It's like the person that we are, as Swamiji once put it, the substance of our sainthood is the one that we already are. I realized one day that I would never be a silent saint. I was hoping that there's such a thing as a real chatty saint, you know? I mean, usually they talk about this deep silence. It's not likely. If we're going to make it out of who we are, that's who we're going to be. And all of the qualities that we have, this is what we have to make it out of. But we have to just realize, is it, you know, I long for this, I regret that. Let me just come to peace with things as they are. Let me not always be restlessly trying to run ahead of just the simple realization that this is the balance sheet that I'm working with. And just let that balance sheet play itself out. But you can play it out from here, where every little oscillation you're worried about. Oh, I tried to meditate and wasn't really able to meditate very well. This one woman said to me, because she deeply wanted to be married and it just isn't happening. So she said to me, so I realize that I really just want God. I really don't want human love. I said, you don't believe that at all, do you? No, she said. I said, just don't bother. Don't be at war with yourself. Just say, I have a very deep longing for a human relationship. I would like to have a beautiful marriage in my life. And I'm probably going to have to reincarnate to get it. You know, or, Master, remove that desire from my heart. Longing and regret. Just stand there in it. And if you want to be free, if you really deeply want to be free, stand there in it and say, Master, show me the difference. Show me the difference from this petty little toy that I want and your bliss, because if I can't see it, I can't let go. In Whispers from Eternity, Master has such sweet conversations with Divine Mother, some of them. You know, Divine Mother, I will be your naughty baby, is how he describes himself. And you know, a mother, when the baby begins to cry, the mother throws a plaything into the crib, doesn't she? Here, play with the doll. Here, take the bottle. Whatever it might be, one of my friends. This is totally off the subject, but so funny. She had four children. By the fourth one, she was a little tired, you know, like cosmically tired. In America, especially, because we don't have the kind of help you have here. So a mother with four children is tending all four children all the time. And her baby woke up, and one of the ways that she would help the baby is she'd go in and she'd give him a bottle of juice. So barely awake, she goes in and she hands the baby a bottle of juice. And instead of, you know, the happy, gurgling quiet that she's used to, he just begins to scream at the top of his lungs. She just goes back to her husband and says, you deal with it. You know, not at all. So she hadn't screwed on the lid of the bottle. So she just hands him the bottle, the nipple falls off, and she pours orange juice all over the child like this, you know. But I somehow love that picture in my mind. You know, we're just there, we want, you know. We cry, we want, and Divine Mother just comes and just pours orange juice on her head, just like that. That's just what happens. I was on the airplane at the beginning of the 17-hour leg from Dubai to San Francisco the last time. Early on, I ordered a cup of hot tea with milk and sugar. I don't know what happened. She put it right on the tray, and the tea went just like this. I watched it. It just came right like that, and then it just upended itself all over me like this. I felt the heat going in and wondered, wow, how much is this going to burn? It didn't burn, but it was just like, you know, here I am. It represented somehow all of the all of the disappointments of our incarnation. You know, all I wanted was a warm cup of tea and okay, you can have it all over you. There I am, just soaked with milk and sugar, you know, at the beginning of a 17-hour flight. I mean, I just went into the bathroom, I washed all my clothes, put them on wet. I mean, there was nothing to do. Of course, by the time I arrived, they were dry. But it's just, little microcosms like that delight me. Because you can watch just the whole cycle. I wanted this. I thought it was going to fulfill me. It comes just as I ordered it. And right before my eyes, it turns into something else. Right? And how much do we react to that? How much do we say, well, longing and regret. Let me just run this one more time. You know, every so often, and I'm sure you all know this too, some soul departs from this planet without much warning. Just somebody has a heart attack or is suddenly diagnosed, and in a very short period of time, they're off the planet. One friend of mine, her husband died. He got up in the night. He walked into the bathroom. He walked to the bathroom. He stepped across the threshold. And his right foot was in the physical world. His left foot went into the astral world, just like that. And as he stepped just like that, she watched him. He fell to the floor. His heart stopped, just like that. And every so often when I walk, I think, you know? But you have to ask the question, am I ready? What would happen? What would I think of? We had a big earthquake in California in 1989. That was a long time ago. And it was in the evening, and I had a class to give. Both my husband and I had a class to give that evening in the temple. By the time evening came, the earthquake was over. There were power outages and things, and we both had to go to the temple, which is about 2 miles away. I just wouldn't get in the car for anything. So I got on my bicycle. I felt safe on my bicycle. He was fine in the car. So we're leaving the house together to go to the same place, but I'm on my bike and he's on his car. But it's like after an earthquake, which is a really impressive experience, I just said, it's been wonderful living with you, darling. If I never see you ever again, I just want you to know that. But it wasn't a joke. It was like at every point in our life, you know, do we want to be held by longing and regret, so even our time in the astral world is just waiting and restless for us to be able to do it again? There's no break. There's no break. It's just one continuous flow of consciousness, and whoever you are now, you just get to be it later, unless you're moving with it. And even if we're meditating badly and we're very restless, pay attention. Isn't this interesting? Look where my mind is going. I've shared with some of you, in those of you who've seen the Finding Happiness movie and heard me tell the story of my friend Paula who died. She had a near-death experience earlier, many years earlier, when she accidentally overdosed on a narcotic cough syrup. She was not a very systematic person, and she was just sipping it regularly over the course of a day. She was in New York City buying merchandise for the store that she was managing. And by the end of the day, she had seriously overdosed and was actually dying. And she was alone in the hospital room, hotel room, and she was so weak and confused that she couldn't figure out how to even contact anyone. So she crawled into the bathroom. She had the thought that if she splashed water on her face, so she kind of leans over into the bathtub and puts water on her face. It's not working. She's leaning. She's looking into the toilet bowl. And it crosses her mind. She says, actually, inside, Divine Mother, am I going to die looking into a toilet bowl? It was such an appalling thought. But she started going down the tunnel of light. And she just started sailing off. She was just leaving her body, sailing off, and she remembered a dress that she had put on layaway for herself that day at the gift show. When she remembered the dress, she came out of the tunnel. Now, I asked her whether she bought it or didn't. I would have bought it because I would not want to reincarnate to have to get it, but she didn't buy it. But it's so, it was such a graphic little thing, isn't it? We sit to meditate. Where does our minds go? To our children, to our work, to our anxiety about whether we're doing it right, to whether people like us or not, to, you know, to our upset tummies. Just where do our minds go? What are we longing for? What do we regret? And meditation itself, Kriya proper, will burn it. But also that awareness becomes our friend. How am I living? What am I doing? And I was talking about, you know, it, just in case this step might be my last one, am I as current as I can possibly be at this point? Because whatever debts you're carrying, you're just going to have to pay them later. Swamiji, once there was a great misunderstanding between two people in our community and a great fracture of friendship. And the next day, Swamiji suggested that the people who had this horrible fracture should all come over to his house for dinner. I said, Swamiji, are you unaware of what's just happened? Oh, yes, he said, I know it perfectly well. He said, but they're all going to have to get over it sooner or later. He said, if they wait till the next incarnation, they won't know why they're so upset with each other. He said, let's just bring them all together now and let them face into it. And about overcoming karma, Swamiji said something very interesting. A karmic wave has a certain size, and if our consciousness is smaller, we feel overwhelmed by that wave. But when the karmic wave rises, if we can pull the energy up to expand our consciousness to begin it, to be bigger, then we can really solve, we can really meet it and overcome it. He said mostly what people do is they stay the same size and they let enough time pass until the karma's wave has lost energy, and then they say, I've overcome it. But we haven't overcome it, we've just outweighed it. Because we haven't grown. And then the next time it comes, but he says, if you can just meet it at the crest. One of my friends, when her husband died, he'd been ill, but she had no idea he was going to die, so it was very sudden when it happened, just was very startling to her. She responded with every ounce of faith and courage that a person could show in such a moment, but she described what she called this lurking sadness that was just sort of always there trying to suck her into it. I mean, that was the size of the wave. She knew that her, you know, she was not happy that her husband was not in this world anymore, but he'd been very ill, and if his time was over, how could she say, you shouldn't have done this? And, you know, he had to go on. It was time for him to go on. But there was this lurking sadness. And she said, the temptation to be sad is always there. And that's how we have to feel about these things. The temptation to be discontent. The temptation to feel bad about myself. The temptation to run away from what is right in my heart and is trying to talk to me. You know, face it now or face it later. I find that very spine-stiffening myself. If we could escape from it, that would be great. If there was a shortcut, that would be great too. But there isn't. So, now or now later. Because later is always now. This is what keeps us on the wheel. Just longing and regret. And the idea that we're just going to run ahead of it and never just sit with who we are. And here's the last and wonderful piece of it. And this is what Swamiji is saying by, now that wasn't so hard, was it? You know, no matter what we've done, no matter how horrible it is, Master said the only difference between a saint and a sinner is the way they behave. Think about that for a minute. I love that. We imagine that a horrible murderer is really very different from Jesus Christ. But the only difference is the way they behave. One of them goes around murdering people and the other goes around blessing them. But the potential is identical. And the divinity is identical. And it's an extremely important point for all of us to remember. It doesn't really make any difference what color we've painted ourselves. Underneath, it's pure gold. And we spend so much energy running away. And when we actually just settle down, it just it's not so bad. There we are. This is who I was, and this is who I am now. Swamiji's response to that dream I had about that relationship with that woman and all of that, his response was so perfect because, see, usually we use past life memories to justify present delusion, right? Well, of course I feel this way because, you know, and back at that time, and I just still remember, and like this. I have to add that that woman went to a psychic to get the matching story from my side, and it wasn't pretty. Let's just put it, and I believe it was also true. I mean, you know, like this. So there we are, and we're both just justifying all of this really negative energy on the basis of. And Swami just looked at us, and he says, you know, neither of you would be capable of behaving that way ever again. It was just so simple. Look, this is behind you. And basically, everything in your heart right now, by definition, it's behind you. The only thing that keeps it present is the fact that we have a grip on it. And if we just sit with it and let it pass, where is it? One New Age person put it really well. Every memory stored within you, there's nothing there except the story you've told yourself about it. I thought that was a really clever way to put it. Tell yourself another story, which is, oh yeah, the past lives of all men are really impressive. But now I choose God. And just make that choice over and over, minute by minute. Master says, take care of the minutes, and incarnations will take care of themselves. That is a really terrific one to contemplate, because we feel overwhelmed. But in this minute, just make this a good minute, and then make the one after it a good one. And he said that's actually all you have to do. Isn't that remarkable? And see how simple it becomes? Just what Swamiji says. Just convince yourself that, you know, you are a child of God, Divine Mother loves you, and that there's no reason to hold on to this ego at all. There, that wasn't so hard, was it? God bless you all.